Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. This is Justine Rutolo, also known as Miss ADD. I want to welcome everybody to my podcast today. So I wanted to share with you why I picked this topic today. And the topic is mindfulness for parents with children and adolescents with attention deficit disorder. And it's even for people who are in relationships with somebody who has attention deficit disorder. You can also use mindfulness to really help you sometimes dealing with some of those behaviors that you're seeing. So anyway, I was running a support group this week for parents, for CHAAD, children and adults with ADD. And one of the topics, the 4 weeks that I'm running the group, one of the topics was mindfulness, and we just did it this past Thursday, and there was a lot of information that I gave out to people, and I saw that a lot of people came up to me after the group and really wanted to figure out how to do this because they understand that whatever they're doing in their family right now, be it with their children or their spouse, or their parents or grandparents, it's just not working. So I wanted to take some time today and just go through the steps that I took in the mindfulness program, and also to share with you stories of some clients that I have that are using it very successfully. So I'm alone today. I don't have anybody on the phone with me, and I don't have anybody in the studio here, so if anybody wants to call in, the number is 917-889-7025, and I would really love for you to call in and ask questions. That would be great. Also, you can go to my website, missadd.com, into my forum section to post some questions for me during the show so that towards the end of the show I can answer the questions. Okay, so let's start with mindfulness. So there's a little cartoon that's on the internet, and it looks like it says mindful, so M-I-N-D-F-U-L-L, and it shows a person's head with all these thoughts that are running around their head. So that's when your mind is absolutely full of thoughts versus mindful. So mindful is all about being able to be present, focusing on the moment. Not running to the future, because if you run to the future, if you're concerned about your children, they're starting school in September, or if they're going on a play date with a friend tomorrow or 2 days from now, and you're thinking about that, anxiety starts to come up. So going to the future causes anxiety. Going to the past absolutely can cause depression. Staying in the moment really helps us to feel peace and harmony. If you can really feel that, even for a second or two, just take a deep breath in, let it out, and just say, I'm in the moment. You, I think, like I did, will begin to see that this can really work. So when I started my own walk into mindfulness, I had a very difficult time believing that this was going to work for me. I was in a tremendous amount of trauma at that time, and I would be driving in the car, and I couldn't tolerate being with myself because my thoughts were just pervasive, negative thoughts running rampant through my head. I just didn't want to be with myself. I didn't know what to do. I couldn't get rid of the thoughts. And so I found a book, which I'm going to share with all of you, and I know I've spoken about this book before. The name of the book is The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer. Amazing, amazing book. It absolutely changed my life. We use this book in the adult support group that I run on Wednesday nights for CHAAD in Torrance, California. And the people in the group just can't get enough of this book. And the interesting thing about this book, if you would all go out and buy it, it would be really worth your while, is that every time you read it, and I think I've read it 35 times, so I guess you could say I have my doctorate in this book, you see something different. Something else catches you that really even helps you to climb higher up. So when I was going through this period where I had all these thoughts that were running through my head and they were pervasive and they were negative, somebody gave me this book. And at first I thought, well, how is a book going to help me? How is it going to help me to be in a better place, to be happy? And the first chapter in the book is The Voice Inside Your Head. Now, this is not a schizophrenic voice. The voice is your thoughts. Your thoughts talk to you all day long, and they at times can give you very bad advice and come up saying some really, really negative things, which can upset you. So The Voice Inside Your Head was the first chapter, and when I saw that, I remember crying because I felt like, wow, maybe this book is really going to help me get out. And it absolutely did. The second chapter, which is actually pretty funny, is called Your Inner Roommate. So what Michael Singer did was to take the voice, the thoughts, and turn them into a person, your roommate. And how would you like to sit on a couch next to your thoughts, who are now manifested themselves into being a real person, and they never shut up? You would probably never have a friend like that. And that's exactly what the chapter talks about. So let's get to parenting now. So for those of you who are parents of children or adolescents with ADD and even significant others, if you do not have ADD, then you don't really understand what it's like to get up every day and to live the life that your children, adolescents, or significant other is living. If you have attention deficit disorder, then you do understand it. And a lot of us, like myself, when I was parenting, when my children were much younger, we want them to be different. We want their life to be different than what we lived because our life was so difficult. So my boys now are 26 and 22. And what's interesting, I'm going to digress for a minute, is that when I started to do this work on myself with the mindfulness, my sons at that point in time were like 22 and 18. They all of a sudden started to see changes in me, and they said, Mom, what are you doing? Because what they saw was that I was a lot calmer. I was able to regulate my emotions, and I was not obsessing all the time, because one of the co-occurring disorders that I had, because I don't have it anymore, was obsessive-compulsive disorder. And my OCD manifested itself more in just obsessing. I didn't have the germaphobe. I didn't worry about everything being exactly in order. Mine was more about getting a thought into my head and obsessing about it. And I would have to ask my children over and over again the same question, and it drove them crazy. Or I'd continue to bring up a topic that we had discussed already, and it really drove them crazy. And the funny thing was, they too have OCD, but theirs is very different than mine. So they noticed this, and I told them what I was doing. And my older son wanted me to get him the book, which I did. And it absolutely had a tremendous impact on his life. And he, to this day, is still very much involved in mindfulness. My younger son is just really now starting to want to work with it more than ever before. He is on the autistic spectrum, the lower end, because he's nonverbal learning disabled. So he has that rigidity, so it was hard for him in the beginning to even grasp some of these concepts. But with patience and time, he's now starting to come around. So they noticed a big difference in me, as I am sure that when all of you start to do this work, your family is going to be happier, your children are going to feel better, and it's going to be wonderful for you. I wish I had had this years ago when my kids were a lot younger, but I didn't, and so I'm just moving forward. So let's talk for a minute about the thoughts. What happens, I think, is you start your day off, and the thoughts start coming up in your head. You get in the shower and you're just thinking and thinking and thinking. And most of your thoughts, I'm sure, are about your children, your family, your significant other. And they start to build because you're engaging in these thoughts as they're coming up. For example, school starting. So maybe one of your children had a difficult year last year in school because they have attention deficit and they're struggling in terms of being able to sit still or focus, or they have a reading problem or a math issue, and you are now coming into the middle of August and thinking about school starting, so you start to ruminate. That's what we call thoughts running through the head. You start to ruminate about your child or children and how are they going to be doing in school this year. So immediately you're in the shower and these thoughts are coming up for you and you start to feel the fear come up and the anxiety, because anxiety is very fear-based. And now you're starting to worry. You're worrying about something that isn't going to happen for maybe 2 or 3 weeks down the road. So in your worrying now, you can't hold on to it, so you have to give it to other people. So you may get out of the shower and call your husband and start talking to him about your concerns and your worry. And maybe you're even at this point starting to cry because you're so upset. And then your children wake up and they're down eating breakfast and you go down there and you start talking to them about things that are worrying you. So here's what happens. They are feeling your anxiety. And when the children feel your anxiety is when their behavior really escalates. Because understand that when we were little, I know when I was, I looked to my parents to take care of things, to be the one that was going to worry about things that I didn't have to worry about, even though I had anxiety. It didn't work out that way for me, but if we could take a lot of those worries from our children and hold on to them, get rid of them, release them, then your children are not feeling like you're concerned about them. That concern that they're feeling is they're not good enough. So instead of giving them those concerns that you have, a good thing to do would be to tell them that you absolutely believe in them and that you know no matter what, they're going to be successful. Being very positive with your children is the answer to the bad behavior that you're seeing in especially oppositional defiant disorder. And I understand there's a lot of people that have a hard time when I talk about how to communicate with your children. I spoke about this a couple of weeks ago, because some of their children's behavior is so out of control, so they put their kids on medication. Just because they're on medication, it's not the magic pill. They also need to learn how to behave in a different way, and they need for you to role model for them how to behave in a calm, loving, kind way. Okay. So let's get back to the thoughts. So instead of engaging in the thoughts, you're in the shower. The thought is coming up about school. So instead of engaging in it, you're just going to release the thought. So let me give you a visual for those of you out there who are very visual like I am. So one of the things that I do in the adult group periodically is I'll buy 30 balloons and I'll bring them in to the group. And I'll ask people to hold on to them, and I'll say, I want you to visualize what it would be like, these are your thoughts, to put those thoughts in the shower with you in the morning. So picture taking a shower with 30 balloons, you're holding on to them, then getting them out of the shower, you getting dressed while holding on to them, taking them downstairs, maneuvering them through doorways, that's very difficult, getting them into the car, driving with them, and they're blocking your rearview mirror because they're just so pervasive, taking them into work, taking them into a meeting that you may have in the morning, or taking them to the grocery store, whatever it is that your day is like, you're carrying around these thoughts with you so that by the end of the day, you are just completely spent because these thoughts have just completely engulfed your entire day. So here's a visual. Think of releasing those balloons up into the sky, and all you're doing is you're just watching them. You're not engaging in them. You're watching them float away. That's what I'm talking about when I say you're not engaging with your thoughts. You're just noticing them. And so in noticing them, another way to do it would be to notice the clouds. It's a beautiful day in Southern California. Most of the time here, this is something that always amazed me because I grew up in New York, is the really deep, deep blue sky that we have here. And periodically, there'll be a cloud that goes across the sky. And to me, in learning this whole process of mindfulness, that was the way for me to just notice my thoughts. So after doing this for 4 years now, I'm pretty much an expert at being able to go through my day and not engage in my thoughts. And if you would just feel that for a minute, if you could just feel how much peace there would be if you could go through your day and not engage in your thoughts and your fears and your worry, your emotions, just notice them. So many people will say to me, well, what about something that's important? What about something that comes up in my head, maybe about my child or about my job that might be important? So here's what I tell people to do. If I'm driving around, if I'm not on the 405 or, you know, highway, if I'm driving around and a thought comes up and for some reason it's something I can't just notice, it's something that I have to pay attention to, involving most of the time it's my two boys, I have a book with me all the time, so I pull over, I write down the thought. There's a freedom in writing stuff down. I released it, and now I can go on with my day. And then when I get home at night, that book is usually with me. I can read it and decide, is this something that I want to do something about? Or now that I wrote it down and I released it during the day, can I just let it go? So I can promise you that given the way I used to be, say 5 years ago versus how I am now, I am completely different in terms of regulating my emotions because I'm not dealing with the thoughts. I'm not engaging in the thoughts the way I used to. I'm just noticing them. So think about having that kind of peaceful day and how much easier it would be for all of you out there to deal with your children, whether they had oppositional defiant disorder or not, because you were in a much better place, a peaceful place, where you could really be able to give your children the kind of attention that they needed, the positive attention. I mean, that's one of the things that is just so important. And one of the things I work with all my clients of little children that I see, I actually work more with the parents than I do with the kids because they're very young, just to help them to give their children the acceptance and love and kindness that they need. Look, I'm not saying that the time is going to come where you may, you know, lose it, because it happens, because behavior is such with children. But if you can really understand that if they connect with you in that negative way, that's the way they get attention from you, is by misbehaving, acting out, and you engage in that with them in the same way, that behavior will continue because they're getting attention. And children will get attention in any way possible that they can, whether it be positive or negative. If it's negative attention, it's still very much attention for them. They're looking for that attachment to you. They're looking for that connection. And the other thing they're looking for, and this is something I spoke to the parents in the support group on Thursday night about, and my clients, they're looking to you to see your reaction to their having attention deficit disorder. So one of the things my 26-year-old tells me all the time, who, by the way, has bipolar 2, which is hypomania, he tells me that the reason he's able to embrace his bipolar and not run from it, but try to deal with it, is because I did raise my two boys to, I taught them how to embrace their attention deficit, to see it as a gift, to understand that if it wasn't for attention deficit, they wouldn't be as creative as they are. Yes, they still had the negative symptoms, and at times I wasn't really good at dealing with some of those because I had them myself, but I did see the positive side of attention deficit, and I would hope that everybody who's listening out there would, I would encourage you to let your children see that in you so they can feel that it's okay, that this isn't a death sentence, that this isn't the worst disability in the world to have. You know, I want to digress for a minute. On Thursday night, excuse me, on Wednesday night at the adult support group that I run, my best friend from the time I was 3 years old, her daughter, who is now 31, came to the group with me because she came down from San Jose to visit me for the night. And she, this little girl, and she's 31, she's had over 40 surgeries in her life, and she's in a wheelchair. And she is my hero, and she has my heart because she's probably the most positive person I've ever met. And there's your physical disability, somebody who can't get up and just run around and do anything she wants to do. She has to use crutches or she's in a wheelchair, but she's extremely positive. And I asked her to come to group on Wednesday night because I wanted her to talk a little bit to everybody in the group about just her life and how she embraces life. Instead of feeling sorry for herself, she really sees the positives of her life. And so that's what mindfulness can do for us. It can keep us centered. She uses it also, and really help us to just stay in the moment and stay peaceful and get rid of that anxiety. So I guess the first step is to focus on the present moment without engaging in your thoughts or your feelings or your emotions, to just release them. And again, I would suggest to everybody to get The Untethered Soul and to read it, because it's an amazing book and it will really help you understand that where the thoughts are concerned, we are the subject noticing the objects. So because they're not a part of us, our thoughts, our emotions, our feelings are not a part of us, they're separate. In just noticing them, then we don't have to engage, because we're the subject noticing the object, and that's what Michael Singer teaches us in that book. And then I guess the second step in this whole process would be awareness. So again, in The Untethered Soul, Michael Singer talks a lot about sitting in the seat of consciousness. So we sit back in the seat of consciousness, and you can literally sit back just being aware of things that are around us. And in this way, we can stay in the present moment. So, for example, I'm sitting here in the studio and I'm just noticing something across the room, focusing. If you focus on an object and you talk to yourself as saying, I'm going to stay in the moment, then there's that peacefulness that comes in, and all you're doing is you're noticing the object. Or go outside and focus on nature, which is absolutely beautiful. Live right on the Pacific Ocean. So I love to drive around Palos Verdes and just really, it's an amazing coastline, and engage in the ocean. That is, a lot of times, if I'm not having a great day, which is rare for me now, I can drive around and looking at that ocean, it can really help me to get back to center. So being awareness of what's happening, and just not engaging in it again, but just being aware of things that are happening. Okay, so then the next thing is you want to be open to things that you're experiencing, okay? So behavior, for example, if your son or daughter is being very ODD and throwing themselves on the floor and having a temper tantrum, you know, our first reaction as parents especially if we're not at home, but we're somewhere else, and our children behave that way, I think what happens is we get upset because we feel like people are looking at us, they don't understand what we're going through, my child is embarrassing me. So when those kind of thoughts come up and we engage in them, then we start to escalate and we can't get to that place of regulating our emotions. So if we could just experience what's happening and calmly go over and try your best to talk to your child, telling them you understand that they're feeling frustrated, they're feeling anxious, they're feeling scared, ask them, what's going on? What's happening? If they can communicate with you and you are able to communicate to them that you really want to know what's happening, you're interested in that, I think what you will begin to see is that they will see you in a different way than they ever saw you before. Because they will see you in a calm way approaching their tantrum or their behavior. Or let's go to a spouse for a minute. Let's say you asked your spouse that has attention deficit disorder to clean up the kitchen before you got home from work because he was going to be home that day, or he works from home. And you come home and he made dinner for everybody and you're a little late and the kitchen is a disaster. So immediately what comes up for us, I'm sure, is I asked this person, my husband, the man I love, to clean up the kitchen and it didn't happen. And now I have to clean up the kitchen after I finish eating dinner and I went to work all day. And even though he works from home, I asked him to do me this favor. So in escalating with him, that's only going to cause the two of you to have some serious issues down the road because a lot of resentment builds, which I've talked about before in the podcast that I did on relationships. So staying in the moment again and not engaging in those thoughts that are coming up, just noticing them, you can very calmly and assertively and kindly have a conversation with your husband about how this makes you feel. Tell him how coming home and seeing all this makes you feel sad because you had asked him to do you a favor. You were working all day and you told him specifically before you left that you wanted the dishes to be done. He might have forgotten. That's something that I hear from a lot of people. But as an adult, hopefully, maybe he is not individuated yet, he needs to take responsibility at that point. But the kinder you are, the more you're going to get him or her, it could also be your wife, to do what you told them you needed. And that's the point of this whole show today, is just really being able to regulate and stay calm and be very loving and kind as much as you can. And that's what mindfulness and meditation, we're going to talk about meditation also, gives us the capability to do. So we need to feel, a lot of times when the parents, we feel out of control because things are happening that we don't know what to do. Mindfulness is the tool to help you get back in control so that you're feeling like you can handle this situation in a very positive, calm way. Okay, so here's a big one, and this is something that Michael Singer talks a lot about in his book, The Untethered Soul, and that's judgments. Okay, so the other night at the support group I did for the parents, we talked a lot about this, and I think it's something that can really cause us to escalate pretty quickly. So I'm going to give you an example. Let's say that your child is continuously late, or your adolescent, or your significant other. It's continuously late. And this is something that really hits your stuff. You don't like that feeling because, let's just say, for the sake of argument, when you were little, your parents or your mom was never on time to pick you up at school. So lateness is something that really upsets you, puts you in a very, very bad place. So your child or your adolescent or your significant other is always late. Don't judge it. Talk about it. Because the minute you start to judge behavior, you can actually feel it. If you can do it right now while I'm talking, think about somebody being late all the time. Think about another behavior. Maybe your adolescent daughter never cleans her room. I would just shut her door, but never cleans her room. And that's something that is big for you because you want her to be able to find her stuff and clean her room. Instead of judging it, like, she's spoiled or she never does what I ask her to do, she doesn't get things done, she's always late. If you could just relax and not judge it and just understand that behavior like that, especially behavior of not cleaning your room, in the adolescent world is extremely common. Every parent I speak to where my clients are adolescents, that is one of their biggest things. And I tell them, just shut their door, and then the natural consequences will come about. Because when they're looking for something and they can't find it, it's not your job to help them to look for it, or it's not your job to put it in the washing machine and wash it. It's their job. So if you could feel more in control by not placing judgment on what you see happening with your children or your significant other and just noticing it and then talking to them about it. For example, I think I shared this before, but I'm going to tell this story again. I was late all the time. And when my boys were very young, my oldest son was 9, my youngest son was 6. I remember pulling up to school one day while they were sitting on the curb, and I was late all the time to pick them up. And my oldest son got in the car and he said, "Mom, can I tell you how it makes me feel when you're late?" And I said, "Yeah," because he was very calm when he said it to me. And I didn't feel like he was judging me. He said, "It makes me feel like I don't matter." Well, I have to tell all of you that was the last time I was ever late. And that is not a lie. Unless it was an act of God and it was out of my control, I was on time from that point on. Not only for my children, but for everything else that I did, because I recognized in what he said to me that there were other people that I was late for that probably felt the same way, that they didn't matter. So in the way he presented that to me, I heard him. And that's the other thing. You want people in your life, especially your children and your adolescents, to hear you when you're talking to them, not nagging them, talking to them. And not talking at them, but having a conversation with them. You want them to hear you, and they will not hear you if you're escalating and if you can't regulate your emotions. They will shut down. And they will also answer you back in the same way. So I really believe that the judgments, and again, you can find a lot of information on that in The Untethered Soul, and how to just release that and to be able to talk to people without judgments. Or the other way they talk about judgments in that book is, you know, when you're walking down the street or you're driving and maybe somebody cuts you off, or you see a friend who comes up to you and really isn't very nice to you, is kind of clipped with you, you might just want to be able to say maybe they're just having a bad day. Instead of passing judgment on them, passing judgment on the person who cut you off. Just let it go. Just let it go. Let it flow through you. When they cut you off, they cut you off. There's nothing you can do about that. If you get crazy, you start chasing them, you start yelling at them, it's not good for you. What all of this is doing that I'm trying to teach you today, and it, again, this isn't a short period of time. This takes a lot of time. It's a process. This is going to lower your blood pressure, and it's really going to help you to live longer and to have a peaceful life with quality in your life, especially where your family is concerned. Okay, so here's something that in the book, The Untethered Soul, Michael Singer talks a lot about. And this was something that I had to do a lot of work on that really, really helped me to stay mindful. And that was releasing past blocked energies. So let me give you an example. One of the examples he talks about in the book is fear of rejection. So let's say that in your lifetime, you had been rejected a lot. And it's something that really sets you off because it's from the past. And maybe you're not always aware of the fact that it's from the past, but it is. And so things that happen to you every day, you're going to do whatever you can to protect yourself from rejection. And you may not even realize that you're doing this, but your psyche, and again, the psyche for people who have attention deficit disorder is very sensitive. It's a very sensitive part. So whether or not if you have attention deficit or you don't, we all have blocked energies from the past, and we have a recollection of being hurt, and so we're going to do whatever we can to protect our stuff. That's what they really talk about in the book, is we'll do whatever we can to protect our stuff. So if we've been rejected before, we're going to go out of our way so that we're never in a situation where we can get rejected. Think about how exhausting that is. I know it was exhausting for me. Mine wasn't fear of rejection. But for me, trying to protect myself all the time from criticism, that was my big thing because I grew up with a lot of criticism. And a lot of it was just that time of my life, just that time that I grew up, because I'm 58. So years ago, parents weren't as well educated on parenting as they are today. So be very aware when you speak to your children. Don't be critical with them, because that criticism, they will carry that for the rest of their lives, and it will also cause them to become perfectionists. I know I work with a lot of young adults who tell me that a lot of their perfection is not only anxiety, but it also comes from the criticism that they heard when they were growing up. So mine, what I used to try to protect all the time for myself was criticism, and it was exhausting because no matter what, you're going to get criticized. And in order to be able to deal with that in a productive, healthy way, you have to release those past feelings or energies that are blocking your heart. That's what The Untethered Soul talks a lot about, is leaving your heart open. Because if you can leave it open, then you feel that energy flowing through your body all day. And this isn't the kind of energy you get from food. This is a spiritual energy. And it's not a religious thing. This is not what I'm talking about. It's a spiritual energy that the Buddhists speak a lot about. And the other thing that the Buddhists talk about that are impressions from the past are called samskaras. And they are actual impressions that we've had from things that have happened to us from the past that block us today in the present from being able to stay calm and peaceful because we're so worried and anxious and fearful all day long, that some of those impressions from the past are going to hit us today. So again, this takes a lot of work. It's just like last week when I was talking about individuation, emotional individuation for adults that I work with attention deficit disorder. It's a process. It takes time. This whole process for me of using mindfulness, meditation, becoming individuated, this was a 4-year process for me. And it probably 2 years into it, I was doing really well, but every day I'm growing more and more. And so much of it is because I am living every day in the moment and not engaging with my thoughts. Okay, so let's continue here. So the next thing is, and here's something that's really big. When I found out that both my boys had attention deficit disorder, I remember feeling kind of sad. I didn't have a lot of information about it at that time, and I was very, very concerned, and I wasn't able to really accept the situation as it was. I wanted to do what I could to control it. I wanted to change things. I wanted my older son, who really had the co-occurring oppositional defiant, I wanted him to behave. I wanted him to be better. I took him to a lot of different therapists, took him to a lot of different doctors, just doing a lot of searching and searching and searching, and not really understanding till a couple of years went by how important it was for me to just accept the situation and accept him for who he was and not try to change him, but try to work with him in a different way, which I ultimately was able to do because I taught both my boys how not only to embrace their ADD, but also their IEPs, their individual education plans that they had in school, so they started to advocate for themselves too. So accepting your children, your adolescents, your husbands, your wives, accepting them for who they are, showing them, especially your children and adolescents, that you understand what's happening with them, that you accept them. Sit down, have conversations with them, talk to them calmly and kindly. Show them how much you love them. Show them that unconditional love that children really look for, because when they don't get it, many times that's when that negative behavior comes up. And they're still, you know, especially the little kids, they're still going to have their times when they're going to act out. They're scared. See, and that's what all the acting out is all about. They have their own fears. They're worried about things. They can't really articulate to you exactly how they're feeling. It's difficult for them. Let them know that you understand that, that you understand that they're having a difficult time, that you want to do whatever you can to help them with that. And you can do that if you do this work that I'm talking about with the mindfulness and having compassion for yourself. That's another big thing. You know, as you go through the day and you see how much you do every day, you not only try to take care of yourself, hopefully, with the mindfulness, but you do what you can to take care of your children. And that can be difficult at times because they have a lot of needs and your needs have to be put on the back burner. So you have to walk through the day giving a lot of love and compassion to yourself. I use a lot of positive mantras. For example, for the past 4 years, every morning before my feet hit the floor, I choose happiness for the day. That's something that I say to myself. Today, I choose happiness. And what's interesting is that when you choose happiness, it's very difficult to have a bad day because you chose happiness. So I would try it and see what happens. And again, don't try it one time and say, oh, this doesn't work, and throw it out the window. This, again, is a process. Noticing your thoughts instead of engaging in them, using the visual of the balloons or the clouds in the sky, that's a process. But if you can just catch yourself during the day and you feel yourself, especially where your children are concerned, you feel yourself starting to escalate, this is what I want you to do. Take a big, deep breath, two or three of them, through your nose, back out your mouth, and I promise you that will help take you down. Catch yourself before you start to escalate. Catch yourself before you start to be negative. And I promise you, you'll see a difference in how your relationship with your children is going. Even the little ones, they're going to notice that you're doing this breathing. They're going to ask you. In fact, a funny story was one of my little boy clients, he was 7 years old, and I was working with his mom and he was in the room, and I was telling her about breathing. And the next session that we had, she came in laughing because she said, last week something happened and I started to get angry. And he said, Mom, remember what Justine said, just breathe, keep breathing. So, see, the kids, they pick it up. They're like little sponges. And by the way, you also can do mindfulness with your children. There's a wonderful book that Goldie Hawn wrote. It's called 10 Mindful Minutes, and it really speaks to mindfulness for younger children, like ages 5 to 12. Get the book. I use it in my practice with kids. It's wonderful. It teaches them how to regulate, and if they learn how to regulate, then their whole life is going to be different, especially if they can start now instead of when they're older, like all of us are listening today and myself. So let's talk a little bit about meditation. So meditation can be different for different people. I have a podcast that you can go to iTunes. They're all for free. It's Justine Rotolo, Miss ADD. And my very, very good friend who's in Los Angeles, and he's a meditation expert, Lee Konecki, he and I did a program together that you can listen to, and he'll walk you through the process. But I'll tell you what I do with meditation. I meditate every morning before I get out of bed, probably for about 10 minutes, but I have my eyes closed, and I'm just meditating. I'm focusing on my breath. And I'm meditating on the day, choosing happiness. The other thing I talk to myself about is staying in the middle, or as the Uncharted Soul calls it, the Tao. Because most of us with having attention deficit tend to live in extremes. So I like to try and every day live in the middle. So that meditation starts my day off in a very positive way. And then during the day, periodically, and I can do it when I'm driving. I'm paying attention, don't worry, for those of you who are on the road with me in Southern California. I am focusing on driving, but I'm also meditating while I'm driving. I'm able to do that. And then I try to do it at night. And here's the thing, for those of you who are listening that have a problem sleeping, if you have any sleeping problems at all, and I do, this works beautifully. If you can lay down and just start to focus on your breath, the same kind of breaths that I just described before about deep breaths in through the nose, out through the mouth. Before you know it, as you're focusing on these breaths, you're going to lull yourself off to sleep. It works for me every time I do it. And the interesting thing is the reason it works is because your mind can't do two things at one time. So if you lay down and you have a lot of thoughts that are running through your head and you have not become an expert yet at just being able to push them out, noticing them, not engaging in them, try this breath method, and I can promise you it works really well. And you might want to even teach it to your children. You know, if they're telling you, as a lot of my younger clients tell me, they have a hard time at night falling asleep, you might want to try that with them. I've worked with some of my clients with this, but what I notice works with littler children, even adolescents, is getting a pair of headphones and letting them listen to some of the sounds, which is meditation music. There's also an app on the iPhone for meditation where they have music also. So I'm sure a lot of you have the iPhone. Your adolescents probably do also. You can pop in your headphones. And again, the brain cannot do more than one thing at one time. And even for you, if you find the breathing isn't working, try listening to the meditation music and see if that helps you to relax it all at night so that you can fall asleep. Because sleep is a healer, and it's something that's really going to help all of you listening out there so that you can deal with your children and your family in a much better way than you have now. So I'm going to be answering some questions that are coming in. I'm just picking them up right now. So let me go back and put my glasses on so I can read these. So the first one is, my son is 9 years old and has attention deficit disorder and is full of energy. I am a working mother, and when I get home, sometimes I take my frustrations from work out on him. What kind of exercises can I do to stop doing this? Okay, so the frustrations that you're bringing home from work, a lot of that has to do with engaging in those things. I'm sure you're obsessing about some of the things that might have happened at work, or you had just a very stressful day and you're not able to really regulate on the way home. So I would suggest that you focus on the way home on breathing, take those breaths, and really just stay in the moment. Don't think about getting home and your 9-year-old who's running around the house. Don't think about that. Just think about the moment as you're driving home. Stay peaceful. Notice the different things that are going by as you're driving. Pay attention to the driving. And then by the time you get home, you're going to feel better when you walk through the door, because you're not going to feel so tense and out of sorts. You're going to feel more relaxed because you've been doing this sort of meditation on the way home, because you're releasing the day. You're not going back to think about what happened during the day. If they come up, the thoughts come up, you're just going to notice them. You're going to release them like you do the balloons, so that when you go home and your son's running around with a lot of energy, you're going to have a little bit more patience to deal with him than you did before. So I hope that was a helpful answer. And again, for all of you who are listening, if you have any further questions for me, you can go to my website at missadd.com into my forum section, or I have a Facebook page. It's called Miss ADD, and you certainly can write a question for me there. Also, if you want to get in touch with me, if you live in the Southern California area and you'd like to have a session, you can also do that either through Facebook or my website. Okay, here's the next question. Our son is 6 years old and is all over the place. I don't know where he gets all the energy. I hear this a lot from parents. My kids were like that too. Is that normal? Yeah, the energy is normal, but if he just runs all the time and can never slow down and can't go to sleep at night, that's something that you might want to talk to the doctor about. Not to put your child on medication for sleep, unless it's absolutely necessary, but you might want to talk to the doctor if you really think that your son or daughter is incapable of slowing down. See, you've got to look at what's normal and what's not normal, and that's one of the things that I work a lot with my clients on, is you've got to normalize things. Like a 6-year-old little boy, he's going to have a lot of energy. I mean, that's very normal for 6-year-olds. So you have to really be able to discern what's normal and what's not normal. Like if you have friends who have 6-year-olds, talk to them and find out more about what their kids are like. And then you can make the determination as to whether or not the amount of energy that your son has is normal. Okay, thanks for that question. I hope that was a satisfying answer for you. Okay, here's the next one. My girlfriend's son was the same way. Oh, I'm sorry, this goes on. My girlfriend's son was the same way, and they took him to their pediatrician, and their doctor said that he is ADHD and put him on a prescription, and now he is very, very calm, kind of like a zombie. Okay, yeah, this went on. I'm sorry, I didn't realize that. Yeah, okay, I'm not so sure I would be putting my child on medication that, you know, at 6 years old. Because, again, you have to decide what is normal. The age for diagnosis for ADHD and ADD inattentive in the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, The DSM-4 is 7. So before I put my children on medication younger than that, I would really get a lot of opinions and really try to figure out with the help of the experts exactly what's going on. It's good to go to a psychiatrist if you're going to put your children on psychotropic medications. There's tons of pediatricians out there who are wonderful and do a great job. But I've always believed that the psychotropic medications should be prescribed from psychiatrists who specifically went to school for that. And again, I'm not saying anything negative about pediatricians, but I would probably try to get a second opinion before I put my young children on that type of medication. Okay, I hope that was a good question. I'm sorry that I didn't understand it went on, but I hope the answer was okay. And again, if you have any questions, let me know. Okay, my husband and our son, age 8, are both ADHD. When we go out to eat at restaurants, what can we do to keep him, our son, in his seat and from bouncing off the walls? Okay, so what I used to do with my kids was I would bring stuff with me to the restaurant that would be able to engage them. Because here's what happens. I think I know this for a fact because I remember vividly being 8 and being ADHD. And back in the Stone Age, nobody knew that I had attention deficit disorder. And having to sit still at the table for a long period of time was really difficult. So I realized that when my own children came along, so I would always bring stuff with me to keep them occupied. Not that I didn't want to engage with them, but the minute that I saw that they were getting bored, because that's a big thing, or they were having a hard time sitting still, that's when I would pull out the stuff that I brought, like coloring books or a pad for them to draw on, or even their handheld little games that they would play years ago, and that was the last resort when I pulled that out because I didn't want to encourage that, and then they feel like every time we ate dinner they could do it, but it really was to help them because you have to really have consideration for the fact that at that age, 8 is very young, they're going to have a really hard time regulating, and they can't sit still just because you tell them to, or you yell at them, or you get angry, and it's upsetting to me when I see parents like that with their children because you got to have some empathy for what it's like to be them. And if you don't have attention deficit disorder, then you don't remember what it's like to have to go through that kind of thing when you're a little kid. But maybe one of you, either you or your husband or your significant other, understands a little bit more. If you don't, trust me, I lived it, and it is a very hard thing to do. So bring something with you to the restaurant when you go out to eat. Thank you for that question. I hope that answer was good for you, and it answered it okay. Okay, I have 2 young children, both ADHD, ages 9 and 12. Each morning is a battle, getting them up, fed, homework, backpacks together, lunches made, dressed, and out the door. We fight, we're late almost every day getting to school. Okay, what can you suggest to help me keep my cool and get them organized so that we can get out the door with everything they need and get to school on time? Okay, first thing is, you're going to do some of this stuff at night. That's what I tell my clients. Okay, so you're going to make sure that their homework is done the night before and their backpacks are all packed and at the door. Not in their rooms, at the front door, okay? You're going to make their lunches the night before. And certainly your 12-year-old can make his own lunch or her own lunch. So engage him or her in that in a kind way. That's part of their routine. So the lunches are all made and they're ready to go the next morning. And here's the big thing. They're going to pick out their clothes the night before. And here's one of the things, especially for ages 9 and 12, you want to talk to them about. You want to say, look, you know, in the morning it's really hard because you guys have a hard time getting up. You're tired. I understand that. I don't want to fight in the morning. See, the worst thing for children before they go off to school is fighting with them because it really colors their day and they don't have a great day. I have a lot of my younger clients talk to me about this, how it upsets them so much when they get yelled at in the morning. And if you think about it, if you got yelled at in the morning, you would be really sad. So you want to talk to them about a new structure that you're going to set up for them so that everybody has a peaceful morning. That's something that's really, really important, is a peaceful morning. Okay, so before you get up in the morning, you and your husband, you guys are going to meditate. Just what I said, whatever positive mantra you want to put into your head, you're going to do it. You know, you could even be meditating and doing the breath and saying, I'm going to have a wonderful morning. I'm going to have a great morning with my kids. We're not going to be late. We're going to get out the door on time. There isn't going to be any yelling. So you're going to meditate on those things in the morning before you get up. Everything, your kids are going to get up. You're going to have breakfast. Everything is ready. The lunches are ready to go. The backpacks are out the door. And you're going to set, here's what you're going to do. You're going to ask your children, how long does it take you to get ready in the morning? Because if you set timers, what I've heard a lot of younger kids tell me is it makes them very anxious when the timers go off. So in the morning, you don't want any anxiety at all because you want them to have a great morning and have a great day. So you're going to ask them, what time do you think, and let them answer this because this is how they're going to learn. What time do you think you need to get up, to get in the shower, to get dressed, your clothes are already picked out, to come downstairs to have some breakfast so we can get out the door? Ask them that question. If they say an hour, try it out. See what happens. But you have to tell them that they have to keep on track. So they can't stay in the shower for an hour because that's not going to work. So it's up to them to figure out how long it's going to take. And what I'm finding with the kids I'm using this with, they're saying it's going to take 10 minutes to do something that their parents are asking them to do, and it's really taken 7 minutes because they're kind of timing it. So you're giving them some autonomy here. You're giving them the ability to tell you instead of you telling them. And this is something that could work very nicely. So I would absolutely try that with them and then see if you can get out the door on time. If not, then you're going to have to readjust that a little bit. This is a great question. Thank you so much for that. Okay, the next question is, sometimes my husband, who has attention deficit disorder, does not follow through on things. What can I do to help him? Watch that word help because it's codependent. Remember things and follow through. Okay. Sit down and have a conversation with him about all the things that you feel he is having trouble following through on, and see if he notices the same things that you do. Have a conversation, a back and forth conversation. Tell him how you feel before you have the conversation. Take some deep breaths. Remember to stay in the moment. Remember to be kind and assertive when you're talking. Remember that his behaviors, your children's behaviors, your adolescent's behaviors are not who they are. That is what they do. So the negative behaviors are not the people that you love. It's what they do because they have attention deficit disorder. That's a real important point for everybody to remember, because you don't want to hurt anybody's self-esteem. So sit down with your husband and have that conversation and make sure that he answers you and acknowledges what you're saying and figure out with him what it is the two of you can do together. Instead of using the word help, what can we do together to make sure that this happens? So you're offering to give him some encouragement and some advice and you know, just work with him instead of leaving him out there to hang on his own, and see if the two of you can't come up with something together so he can be successful. See, and that's the other thing with your children and your adolescents. You want them to be successful, and you want to build on those successes. Because remember, this is a gift. We are a member of the elite population. We are really bright, bright people. Very bright, very creative. Remember, there wouldn't be a Hollywood if there wasn't for attention deficit disorder. And the kids that I work with love that. They get so excited because they feel good about themselves. It really makes them feel good. And that's ultimately what this is all about, and why I wanted to talk today about mindfulness, because I want your children to grow up having real positive relationships with their parents, feeling really, really good that their parents communicated with them, that their parents understood what they needed, understood what they were going through, and really wanted to be there and were very positive, positive people in their lives. Okay, thanks for that question. Next question is, we have 3 children, ages 6 to 9, 6, 9, and 11. The 2 oldest are ADHD. The 2 older boys act very grown up and tend to be pretty calm and responsible. I have recently heard the expression parentified. What is the difference between treating them in a grown-up manner and parentifying them? How can we tell the difference between the two? How do we know if this is happening? How can we correct it? Okay. So if your 2 boys are just acting grown up, that's good. That's a very good thing. You're doing a good job. If you feel like they're taking care of you, they want to take care of you emotionally, that's parentified. Or if they start to take care of their younger sibling because they feel that you can't do it for some reason, you know, you might be exhibiting some depression or some anxiety, so they want to kind of keep the peace in the family, so they step up and they start taking care of the other kids. And it's excessive, and it's too much, and they're always worried about you and asking you, Mom, how do you feel? Dad, how do you feel? No. What you're doing then is you're parentifying your children, and what's happening is developmentally they're losing the stages of childhood. And a lot of these children grow up and go on to have problems. They have some mental issues. They could have substance abuse issues. So I would really, really be aware of not letting that happen in your family. But kids acting grown up, but still having fun and enjoying themselves and not worrying about you and asking you how you are emotionally, that's very different. Grown up is a good thing, but parentified is not a good thing. So thanks for that question. That was a really good question. Okay, and here's our last question. Our son is ADHD, 16 years old. How can we create boundaries and rules that he must follow, because he seems to be breaking every home rule on purpose? And what do we do to discipline him, to give him consequences that mean something to him? Okay, so 16 is close to being a young, I guess we could say close to being a young adult. But really, and here's what you have to remember, when especially boys have attention deficit disorder, chronologically your son is 16, but he's really probably 14 emotionally. And that's something you have to be aware of when you're dealing with him. So you have to be clear with him in terms of creating boundaries. And the boundaries are things that you want him to be able to accomplish. And depending on the type of attention deficit he has and the type of medication that he's on, you have to be realistic about how many things you want him to do at one time. For example, sometimes you can't tell a child like this, especially if they have a processing issue. Go inside, brush your teeth, wash your face, put your pajamas on, and then clean up your room before you go to bed. They can't do it. You have to be specific. You have to give them maybe one or two things to do, even at this age, because, again, you want them to be successful. Okay, so you have to be very clear, have to be very kind when you speak to him. I know this can be difficult because as they get older, that escalation can get worse. But the more you keep it down and you're calm and you sit down and explain to him what it is you would your needs are, that will happen. But let me tell you something else you could do. Depending on what it is that you want done, you want to engage him in how and when you want it accomplished. So let him negotiate with you a little bit, because negotiating is a tool that everybody's going to need in their life. And if they learn how to do it in the house, and there's a safety factor in their own house, then when they get out in the world, it's going to be easier for them to do. So let's say, for example, your boundary is, you need to be in bed at 9:30. Well, he's 16, and even though I said emotionally he was 14, he may want to stay up till 10. So compromise with him. Let him negotiate. You know, tell him, I'll tell you what, two nights a week you go to bed at 9:30 because I love you and I'm worried about you not getting enough sleep. And then, you know, the other three nights you can go to bed at 10. And then on the weekends, my kids, it was, you know, they could stay up. It was very different. Because my feeling was when the weekend came, after they held it together all week at school, they got their homework done, they went to bed on time, they needed some time to really relax and just do their thing. And my house was always the house that everybody wanted to come over and have sleepovers and have pizza. And I always had that kind of house because I wanted my kids to bring their friends over and I wanted to see who they were hanging out with, and you will all be very smart if you do the exact same thing. And again, here's where the mindfulness can be helpful in having a conversation with your son like this. If before the conversation you meditate, you get into the moment, you get peaceful, you just notice the thoughts as you're having the conversation, don't engage in them, and just be kind and assertive, telling your son what you need and listen to him at the same time. Now, in terms of disciplining him, which again, in the Greek language, the word discipline means to teach, doesn't mean to yell and scream. Consequences, here's what I find that's pretty fascinating. When I work with adolescents and something happens in the family and they've done something that the parents are upset about, when I ask the adolescent, to give themselves the consequence, it's usually a lot worse than when the parents give it. So it's pretty funny and it's pretty interesting. So talk to them about, if something happens, what is it that you think your consequence should be? You know, let them, again, engage them, because this is a 16-year-old, so engage him in the consequence, depending on what the crime was. If this is a safety issue, and I would make this very clear, as I did with both my boys, here was my safety issue. They both had cell phones. When I called them, they needed to answer their phone. They both, if I text them, they needed to answer the text. If they were out, they needed to check in with me and let me know where they were and what they were doing. I, before they went out, needed to know their plans at 16, who they were going to be with, and if they were going to be over somebody's house, I needed the phone number of that house. The other thing I always told my boys was that if they were out with some people and they weren't driving and people started to drink and drive, to call me, and that there wouldn't be a consequence no matter what time it was, I would come and get them, because I never wanted my sons getting in the car with anybody who was drinking and driving. And remember, you're dealing with kids with attention deficit disorder. Their impulsivity level is way up there, even when they're on meds. So they may not think this through. If they know that, honestly, you would go pick them up instead of getting in the car with somebody that was drinking, you will save their life. So please get off this podcast when we're done and just run and tell your kids this. This is so important. So in terms of the consequences, the safety issues, they were pretty big consequences. If I didn't hear from them, if I couldn't get in touch with them, they were grounded. They were grounded usually for a week. 2 weeks is a little bit too much. They get it. They understand it. When it's a non-safety issue, you know, if they lie to you, kids and adolescents with ADD lie. It's a given. So I usually always used to, when my older son would give me a response to a question, I used to always think like, okay, well, I really want to believe him, but, you know, I know this isn't true. So here was the rule that I had. And believe it or not, this worked. I told both my boys that if they were honest and told the truth, there wouldn't be a consequence. But if they lied, the consequence would be worse. So I might, for those of you who are listening and have adolescents, I might really try that. Even your younger children, because the lying I know can be very frustrating, very pervasive at times. So these are all good questions. I thank all of you for your questions. I thank you for your time, for listening. I hope that this today was informative for you. You can't learn mindfulness in an hour and a half. My suggestion would be if there's any place where you live that they're offering mindfulness classes, you might want to go and take those classes. I know UCLA here in Southern California offers them. Again, this is going to take time. It's a process. Stay in the moment. Don't run to the future. It causes anxiety. Don't go to the past. It causes depression. You know, don't engage in your thoughts. Just notice them and your emotions. When you speak to people in your family that you love, do it with kindness and love and be assertive. And, you know, the more communication that you establish in your family and the more unconditional love that you have for your children, things are going to get better. I promise. I know they will because it's happened for me. So this is Miss ADD, Justine Rutolo. I'm going to sign off now. I want to thank everybody for listening. If any of you live in the Southern California area and you'd like to come to the adult support group that I run for CHAD, Children and Adults with ADD, there's a $5 charge. It's every Wednesday night from 7:30 to 9. I usually get there at 7 in case anybody wants to come and talk to me. And it's 2785 Pacific Coast Highway in Torrance. And then again, if any of you want to go to my website, missadd.com, to either contact me or write me some questions on my forum section or my Facebook page, Miss ADD. My book is at the publisher. It's almost done, The Gift of ADD. I'm very excited about the book. When it comes out, I'll let all of you know about it. So I'm going to sign off. And next week, I don't think we're going to have a podcast because I think we're going to Disneyland, believe it or not. And I'm looking forward to that because I can be a kid for a day, which will be fun. Okay, I want everybody to have a great night. Thanks for listening. My other podcasts are on iTunes. You can listen to them for free. And remember, everyone, to stay in the moment. Have a good day.